Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Dark Wraith Audio Lecture Series, specially edited academic lectures in economics and business. Lecture 12, delivered live before a classroom audience on September 9, 2009. The title of this lecture is Employment and Unemployment.
Today, Employment and Unemployment. This lecture is part of a broader arc that is pursued in economics concerning prosperity. What constitutes prosperity differs from one person to another, and in fact, from one nation to another, and from one time to another. I've talked about GDP, the gross domestic product. If GDP rises, is that a sign that prosperity has increased in a country? Of course, there's a difference between nominal GDP and real GDP. Real GDP adjusts for inflation. So we would certainly want to talk about real GDP. Has it grown? And is that proof that the nation is prospering? Or are there other measures besides just real GDP? Certainly, we can talk about employment and unemployment. Those two would be measures of the prosperity of a nation. But the topic gets a little bit nuanced. And before I go into employment and unemployment, I should point out that there are other measures of prosperity, not GDP, not employment and unemployment. In a future lecture, I will talk about these other measures of prosperity, which are altogether reasonable, but we don't address those directly and early in a macroeconomics course. So for today, we are going to talk about employment and unemployment. Somewhat technically, but also I'm vitally interested in you understanding what the numbers mean that you hear in the press. The unemployment rate in June, it was 9.5%. And then in July, it fell to 9.4%. But then in the latest month reporting, August, it jumped to 9.7%. So clearly, the unemployment picture is not good. This is the highest unemployment rate we've had in a long time, and that's just the official unemployment rate. As you will see, the official unemployment rate, once you know how the thing is constructed, it's almost jaw-dropping. Wait a minute, they do it that way? Well, that's kind of bull. Yeah, that's how they do it. But I'll get to that in a minute. But it gets even more nuanced. So for example, I believe it was in July, something like 250,000 jobs were lost. That was one of the numbers that came out. And yet the unemployment rate dropped from 9.5 to 9.4%. So the obvious academic question would be, WTF? How could you lose 250,000 jobs and yet have the unemployment rate go down a little bit? Well, those are questions that we will address in time. But for this lecture, I'm more interested in you knowing definitions, but not just memorize the definitions. Understand what these mean to you, perhaps, and to a sound analysis of the unemployment rate and the employment as parts of the whole economic picture. Now, I use the word population of a country or of an economy, and with a country sometimes being a proxy for an economy. Population, in its broadest sense, I would be referring to the people who are either citizens or are legally here. I would not be talking about the illegal immigrants. That gets into some hot stuff that I don't want to get into right now, although we will later in the course. but for the time being, when I say population, I'm talking about the citizens of the country and those who are here on legitimate work visas. However, I do need to distinguish between the overall population and what we might call the non-institutionalized population. In most employment numbers, we are looking at a reference point that is not actually the population of the country, it's the non-institutionalized population of the country. The people who are not in prisons or otherwise in some state of confinement. That's important in a country like this, where we have a staggeringly high incarceration rate relative to most countries, certainly relative to civilized, developed, first world countries. Our incarceration rate is simply amazing. We are in league with some of the most repressive regimes on earth and how many people we put behind bars or otherwise confined for one reason or another. It is a comment on several issues that we will not get into right away, although I'll touch on them later. The prison system, the penal system, I should say, in our country has become a latter-day jobs program, a huge one, a massive program that stimulates the economy, that provides jobs to communities all over the country with corollary funding going to enhancing law enforcement departments around the country and all of that. In other words, whereas we might have had food stamps and jobs programs and minority help programs in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and into part of the 90s, in our era, the welfare queens, to use a Ronald Reagan era term, the welfare queens have become our towns and cities that get their jobs from prisons, from all of the people who work in the penal system in one capacity or another, or in the justice system in one capacity or another. For example, just a couple of weeks ago, President Obama announced a $1 billion package of new money for law enforcement. That's nothing but a fiscal stimulus. It is essentially, instead of saying we're going to provide $1 billion for food stamps, we are instead going to provide $1 billion to hire new police officers. And those police officers will arrest more people using more laws and more strict interpretation of the laws. We have an employment program in this country that is now part of the American fabric. And anyone who would dare to challenge it is criticized as being soft on crime or whatever, or wanting Al-Qaeda to attack us again, or something of that nature. But understand this, when I talk about the population in terms of employment, I am not talking about all of the many, many people in this country who are in prisons. And the more people we put in prisons, and we will be putting more and more people in prisons in the years to come, the fewer people will be out there to be counted in employment and unemployment figures, because those people in the prisons disappear from the employment picture that is officially painted in this country. So here we go. We're talking about the non-institutionalized population of the country. So I will write that simply as population. The largest set with which we will work in talking about employment. Within the population, we will define a subset, the working age population, which is a subset of the population. Now, the working age population is those people, again, who are not institutionalized, who are 16 years of age or over. That would be the working age population. The working age population can then be brought down to another subset. Within the working age population, there would be the labor force. the labor force, and I will be for this course a little bit loose on this, but the labor force would be the working age population that is either gainfully employed or actively seeking gainful employment. Again, the labor force would be that part of the working age population that is either gainfully employed or actively seeking gainful employment. By the way, that would mean that the labor force comprises only those people who are 16 years of age or older, because it's a subset of the working age population. So when we talk about the labor force on its own, we would say those people 16 years of age or over who are either gainfully employed or actively seeking gainful employment. Now, when I say gainful employment, I'm talking about employment that is documentable and legal. So we will get back to that here in just a little bit. But here's the labor force. And finally, down to the last breakdown. The labor force comprises two mutually exclusive, exhaustive subsets. One is those people who are employed and those people who are unemployed. So the employed would be those in the labor force who are gainfully employed. The unemployed would be those in the labor force who are actively seeking gainful employment. You follow with me how it works? Now, for unemployment compensation purposes, you have to go in and show, well, I've been looking at these jobs and here's my damn resume. I had this guy sign off. He said I suck, so I didn't get the job. But you, for that kind of unemployment benefits. But more broadly, when the statistics are collected, they are collected by surveying a very large number of households. I believe it's still about 50,000 households. And they say, are you employed? No. Well, are you looking for work? Well, sort of. Sort of what? Are you actively out there beating the pavement? Not really. Okay, you're out. You would not be in the labor force anymore. You are not actively seeking. Well, okay, you work for Caterpillar, you're saying. Well, yes. Are you actively seeking? Well, yeah, I mean, I've been beating the pavement. Ah, you are counted as unemployed because you are in the labor force. You're actively seeking gainful employment, and you don't have that gainful employment. So there's the breakdown. It's kind of a... It's actually not that hard. You can get into some odd little things like the labor force participation rate and all that kind of stuff, which I'm not too interested in right here and now. In this lecture, I'm trying to paint a little bit broader stroke to give you the understanding of how employment and unemployment work in a more theoretical fashion and also where the problems arise. Now, what does it mean to be gainfully employed? According to our government, if you work 1 hour per week, you are gainfully employed. And that should elicit from you a WTF. Again, you see, 1 hour a week, you're employed. Fully employed. Half an hour a week, well, you suck then. Now, if you're not paid and it's like volunteer work, like a family business, something like that, you'd have to do 15 hours. But if it's paid work and you do 1 hour a week, you're counted as employed in our system. So, gainful employment, well, that is a little bit tricky when you're saying that gainfully employed, you could be starving to death. But that's the reality of how we do the numbers. Now, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and that's at www.bls.gov. This is a part of the Department of Commerce. They collect all kinds of different numbers. Although I would strongly recommend that you not rely entirely upon government numbers. I stopped years ago as a professional economist trusting the government's numbers because sometimes the government is disingenuous. It doesn't lie, but the numbers don't always tell you the full picture. There are some great private sites where you can get some more comprehensive data that doesn't smooth things out and take away some things that are interesting to look at. So, and I can give you those subsequently. But certainly, we can get a lot of different numbers from the government's Bureau of Labor Statistics website. However, what you hear, the unemployment rate for this last month was, that carries a whole lot of baggage. 1 hour a week, that means you're employed? Really? Sweet. So when the unemployment rate goes down, and you'll hear that eventually, the unemployment rate fell last month, it's a good times are ahead. Well, maybe that was a whole lot of people getting a couple hours of work a week. That does not mean that we are back on the road to prosperity. That does not. So be cautious when you hear good news about the unemployment rate. Ask yourself, well, what kind of employment were these people getting? Now, here's the thing. The working age population has within it the subset we call the labor force. These are people who are employed gainfully or actively seeking gainful employment. The truth of the matter is that we expect the unemployment rate to go up in recessions and down during expansions. Interestingly enough, though, because of the way these statistics are collected, and they're collected in an accounting fashion, not in an economist's way of thinking, we do not see the nuances of the ebbs and flows of economic activity in the labor markets. When times get bad, a lot of people will lose jobs, but that does not mean that they are no longer productive human beings. If you are working in your home, you know as well as I do from an economics perspective, that's an opportunity cost of time. There really is a value there. You might, when you're unemployed, do some work for a friend and he does some work for you just so the two of you can get by. There is a true exchange of value for value, which would in many ways be an employment, but we don't count it. We also know that in recessions, we have more gray market and black market activity. That's not gainful employment, but it is employment. You lose your job, sir. But fortunately for you, you meet this older lady. And she says, "Would you like to be my kept boy?" Yes, you have become cougar bait. You are now an American male gigolo. You cook for her, you provide cleaning services around the house, and you indeed provide love. And all she asks in exchange is that you wear very tight pants, which she buys for you, that you wear in the Ferrari that she bought you. This man is employed, well employed. But where's the money? You see, in good times, you would see yourself, "I would never do that." But the times are bad, and you were lonely, and she was there. So you see, sir, that you are, in fact, employed, but the official statistics would not measure that employment. And let me ask a broader question. Have any of you ever made some money that you did not report to the IRS? Oh, for God's sake, don't volunteer. Yeah, man, I have never done that. Bullshit. Yes. Oh, actually, I've met a few people in my life. They would actually report any income. Yeah, sure. I got $50. I actually did. Yes, I'm going to fill out the stupid, complicated form to do the proper withholding and report that and send in the part of the $50 that belongs to the government. Yes, I am going to do that. No, I'm not. I'm not stupid. No one's going to know, except the people who listen to this iTunes podcast, for God's sake. But you see, here's the thing, though, that there is, and especially in bad times, I mean, people work. They'll especially if you're really in dire straits, you'll do work under the table kind of work. It's gainful. It's not illegal work, but it's just work. There's a fellow that's been prowling the neighborhoods right around my place. He used to be a factory worker here in town. He just goes around every day mowing lawns, $20 a lawn, which is actually a surprisingly good deal because he'll mow big lawns for $20. He's out there all day, many days of the week, just cranking around, and the only thing he asks is cash. Cash only. Yeah, it's a very efficient accounting system, cash only. And for him, it works. Clearly, he is working. It's gainful employment. But it's not on the books of any government agency that he's doing this. And the people, $20 out of their pocket, they're not going to report that on their income taxes or anything like that. So that's great. So there you go. In a recession, you will see more of that kind of work. You'll see in-kind work, gray market activity, and you will also, in fact, see the real thing. More black market activity. In normal times, you would be a software engineer. Sure. But the times are bad, there are no jobs, so what have you done? You've turned to male prostitution.
Of course
I have. Yes, I have. Uh-huh. And you have turned to drug dealing. And you have turned to producing pictures of, shall we say, youthful ladies. And you, sir, have turned really to the dark side. You, sir, I don't even want to get into this, but you, sir, are doing auto mechanic work out of your garage at the back of your house. Okay? You see, all of these people are in black market activity. That's black market because it's illegal to do what you're doing in the backyard of your house. But certainly this is all black market. It's illegal. You started a numbers running operation. That's illegal. And you over there, God knows what you're doing, but I know it's illegal because you got that damn smirk on your face all the time. So you see, this is black market activity, and it's keeping unemployed people from starving to death, you see. So here we go. This is one of the big problems, is that in bad times, we in some ways overstate unemployment because people are doing work possibly for thing of value in terms of tangibles or intangibles, and sometimes directly for money. And it doesn't become part of the statistics. So on the other hand, interestingly enough, well, but let me get down to this. What are the problems with just our standard numbers as far as unemployment goes? Remember, you would just take the number of people who are actively seeking gainful employment, divided by the total labor force, and you get the unemployment rate. That's just how it's done. The number of people who are actively seeking gainful employment, who are in the labor force, divided by the labor force itself. There's your unemployment rate. But what are the problems with it? Here are three. One is the discouraged worker. No, that's not the disgruntled worker. I always try to bluff people on an exam. I put that as a choice, disgruntled worker. No, it's discouraged worker. Discouraged workers are people who were formerly in the labor force. They were either had gainful employment or were actively seeking gainful employment. But somewhere along the way, they lost their job, they couldn't get a job, and they said FTS. Fancy that scenario. I can't find a job, the hell with it. I'm going to go back home, live in my mom's basement, where she'll provide me with barrels of Cheetos, and for the rest of my life, I can play World of Warcraft and put hateful anonymous messages on blogs. That's the person has just given up, essentially burned out. I've met homeless people who were once people who had very good jobs. And somewhere along the way, they lost their job, they looked and they looked, and they finally said, enough, I give, I can't do it. I know people who were in the labor force who lost their jobs, and they just became the housemate while the other person worked. There was a long time ago, you had a great, great job, but you lost that job, so now your wife brings home the bacon, and you are at the house, and you just take care of the kids and clean the house and go out and gossip with the neighbors. You're smiling. That's a good life. Yeah, I know. It's sweet. But you have actually just disappeared from the labor force. You just vanished. You're in the working age population, but you've disappeared from the labor force. In other words, the labor force participation rate, how many people are in the labor force divided by the working age population, has actually lowered because you have disappeared from the labor force, but you're still in the working age population. So it's kind of an interesting thing there that sometimes we have these discouraged workers. Now, how many discouraged workers are there in this country? Well, the Bureau of Labor Statistics has a number. I've seen numbers a lot higher from private economists. I'm not going to even give you a guess because even a couple of semesters ago, I probably would have given you a number that I thought was pretty accurate. Right now, I'm not sure. I'm just not sure of how many discouraged workers there are in this country. I've seen numbers in the millions of these. People who are just essentially have vanished from the workforce for one reason or another. So the discouraged worker is one of the problems with official unemployment results and numbers, is that they don't count these people who have simply given up or vanished or who are no longer looking actively. Now, a second problem with the official numbers is what we call underemployed. And that one's pretty easy to see, considering I just told you a while ago that to be employed, all you have to do is work 1 hour a week. Well, you know as well as I do that thatsucks.com. No one can live on an hour of work a week. So what's happening here is that we're counting people as fully employed who are starving, who are not getting as many hours as they want. I don't know if any of you have ever had the problem, but I know a lot of people who just beg for more hours at work, and they just can't get them. And it makes for a very difficult situation for these people because they're employed. Well, sure. But they are underemployed. They're not getting as many hours, and therefore the quality of their lives is lower. And in fact, they are not doing as much for the economy as they would if they had more money. And in fact, if they had more work, they'd be providing more productivity to the economy. If they had more work, they'd be getting bigger paychecks that they could go to the store and buy things with. They could put some more money in the bank for investment purposes and all that. The fact that they're underemployed is a significant problem, and yet it is not reflected in the official unemployment rate. Here's the third problem, misemployment. Many people do jobs that are, for lack of a better word, beneath them. Many people do. Look, I've been a teacher for 30 years. I would tell you right now that most of my students did not ever get a job that they wanted. They ended up doing things that were considerably less than the skills that they had been taught in college. The stories are legion. Longtime friend of mine. Bachelor's degree in biology, bachelor's degree in geology, master's in plant pathology, master's in geology. She works on weekends as a banquet waitress. During the week, she works the night shift dipping lenses, eyeglass lenses, in coating materials. That's her life. With all that brilliance, all that genius, that's her life. I've known many, many people who have gotten degrees in fields that they thought were hot, hot, hot. Or fun, fun, fun. Or interesting, interesting, interesting. Only to find out that the rest of their lives, they were doing stuff that was most decidedly not hot, not hot, not hot. and not fun, not fun, not fun, and certainly not interesting. I like to sometimes make the joke about you got a job as the assistant manager at Jiffy Lube. Well, I actually know a very bright young man who got a degree in business who is an assistant manager at a Jiffy Lube. That's all he could find. That was 14 years ago. He's still there. Fat, tired, broken. Marketing majors, I know one who rose to the top. She's a top executive at a women's fashion lingerie firm, a big, huge one. Most of the marketing majors, the closest they get to marketing is dressing the mannequins in the storefront window at the retail store where they work. Yeah, that's what the reality of it is for most people. I got a very good longtime reader of my websites. He was once a high-powered software engineer writing code that to this day is still inside of the programs. Now he's lucky if he can get forklift work. That's the reality of life in America 2.0. Don't let me drive you away from education. You have no chance without the education, but you have only a slim chance of being where you want to be with the education. Much misemployment is out there. A great deal of misemployment is out there. And a lot of it, you can just have the right-wingers and the conservatives, well, if they wanted the job of their dreams, then they'd go out and get it. Oh, like hell. That's not how it works. There's your three problems that I would be interested in you understanding is about our official unemployment rate. Yes, it gives us a picture. It gives us some knowledge, some information, I'm sorry. But it does not give us knowledge. And it certainly is only a tiny part of understanding that we would want when we're talking intelligently about unemployment. Okay, now, going at unemployment from a different direction, I would break unemployment down along three dimensions, and these are in terms of how the unemployment happened. And when we look at it from that perspective, we can see that there is unemployment that we can, we have, and perhaps even we should address. Then there's unemployment, which is actually oftentimes a good unemployment. And then there's an unemployment that is an ugly, dark unemployment that has a very bright, long-term implication, but it also has a dark long-term implication. So let me start with the easiest one to explain, the cyclical unemployment. Cyclical unemployment is unemployment that is associated with the business cycle. People lose jobs in recessions. People get jobs in expansions. Cyclical unemployment has historically, during the era of the liberal economics that was advanced by John Maynard Keynes and operationalized by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, this is the kind of employment that government policy has addressed through fiscal stimulus and more broadly, through counter-cyclical fiscal and even monetary policy. Cyclical unemployment. When recessions happen, the government in our era has seen itself as having a role in mitigating that, getting people jobs, giving people money so that they'll spend, and then they'll have the stores will hire more people, cutting taxes so more money is in people's pockets. But the other side of that, of course, is that during expansions, yeah, great, unemployment is down, 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 but at the same time, do you really want unemployment at zero? And I can assure you that if you think about it for a minute, you'd say no. Have any of you ever worked with a stupid person? A person who was too stupid to live, much less to have a job where he could endanger your life? In expansions, if unemployment goes down too much, we are hiring people who really shouldn't be in the labor force because they are threats to themselves. They are marginally productive at best. And in many cases, yes, indeed, they come from Toledo. So here's the deal. Countercyclical fiscal policy is a double-edged sword. In bad times, we want to get people working. We want to increase employment. In good times, we want to slow down the growth rate of employment. We don't want too many people working, just like we don't want too few people working in this country. Now, here's the other part of it, though. This sounds great in theory, and in fact, in the Keynesian era, since the 1930s, we have done magnificently compared to the pre-Keynesian era in terms of shallowing out the recessions and keeping them from lasting for decades and decades as they had in some cases before the Keynesian era. So it has been successful. However, it's not as easy as, oh, unemployment rate's just way up there now, so let's spend some money on it. You have to be in front of it because you're talking about literally oceanic tidal waves. And so if you are going to get that wave to back off, you've got to start early moving into it. When the Obama administration pushed Congress to bring forth a $787 billion anti-recession package, people now are, that was back early in the administration, in February, I believe it was. And now you've got people bitching, well, the unemployment rate is still going up. He has failed. Well, like hell, it's going to take a while for the effect to set in. You can't just turn an ocean around on a dime. If you want to stop a recession before it gets ugly, you've got to start early. You have to start, in the case of this recession, I was screaming my bloody head off in 2006, 2007. Only a few economists were, but we were out of favor. The administration at that time, under President George W. Bush, sat on its fat ass and let the picture get to the point where it was bad before anything got done. So if you are going to slow down a recession's tidal wave, you need to get in front of it soon, early. Otherwise, you might not even get much of an effect at all. In the current case, yeah, the effect is beginning to show. Even conservative economists are saying, yeah, there is an effect here. It's beginning to turn the tide of the economy. Unfortunately, turning the tide of the unemployment picture, that's going to take longer. And actually, truth be told, as you'll see later in this course, thank God it's going to take a little longer. Because if the unemployment rate starts to fall too fast, inflation is going to explode real hard. So as long as we can keep the unemployment rate from dropping too fast, we might have a chance of avoiding a major inflationary cycle. Next part of this. After cyclical unemployment, there is actually a good kind of unemployment called frictional unemployment. Frictional unemployment is the unemployment of people between jobs. Now, let's take an example. Madam, you are a single mother of four kids, two of them have names, and you live in a trailer, and your brother is living with you right now. He's living under the trailer because there's this warrant thing, and it's just all messed up. The cops don't really understand what happened at that funeral. But and you work as a waitress, and you work lots of hours. Okay. Now at your waitressing job, one day I'm the boss. I'm Big Al. Woman, you always hate it when I called you woman. Woman, you're fired. You say, what? Yes, you're fired. I had a customer over there who was bitching about you. That customer was getting fresh with me. I slapped him in the face. Yeah, you didn't need to slap his face off. You used the plate, damn it. You're fired. Get out. And take those damn kids with you. And who's that creepy guy hiding under your car? That's my brother.
Send him back to the trailer. Get him back under the trailer. The cops were in here yesterday. Anyway, get out of my damn restaurant. Okay, you see, now are you going to go home? Well, I'm going to sit back and eat some bonbons and take it easy for a few weeks. Maybe I'll check some help wanted ads next month. Or are you going to go into your trailer and scream, I gotta get a job! Yeah, you gotta get a job. My God, your kids, your brother. I mean, your brother, he's hungry. He'll eat the dog. You like your dog. He will too, if it's grilled. Okay, where the hell was I? You see, now, you on the other hand, you are a top executive at a high-powered financial services firm. You are at the top of your game. You've got $2.5 million in the bank. And there's a reorg that happens, and your position is sort of consolidated, and they no longer have your position anymore. And so, you know, you've got huge number of contacts. You've got $2.5 million in the bank. Are you going to leave the building screaming, I gotta get a job? No, you're gonna take a vacation to the islands and take your boy toy with you. He changed his name to Gordo. Just for you. Okay, you see, you are going to just relax. You won't even probably look at the papers because, for one thing, the economy is just booming along. You know there's going to be work. Here, in this recession, this poor young tart, you are, on the other hand, struggling. It's a bad recession. There's hardly any jobs. If you can find a job, you'll take it right away. Do you see how frictional unemployment is like a signal of people's sentiments about their personal prospects for the future? With frictional unemployment, as it goes up, that's actually telling us, in some cases, to a certain extent anyway, that people are okay. And that, you know, I can sit back, go to the islands with Gordo, and sip some drinks that have little tiny umbrellas in them. You, in your case, times are bad. My God! Wait a minute, where's Fido? You see? Frictional unemployment, if we can tease out and see, separate out frictional unemployment from other unemployment, oh, that's very cool because it can actually tell us when there are good times, what people's sentiments are. The last one is structural unemployment. Structural unemployment is the unemployment that is created by technological advancement, dynamic efficiency, the growth of technology. Do you remember some years back when the big auto factory here in town laid off 1,300 people. My God. They put blocks of those people in front of me here and told me, teach them algebra. Really? 30, 40, 50-year-old people unemployed. They had never been unemployed. They had worked in the same place their whole lives. And they throw them at me and say, teach them some algebra. I go in there, hi guys, let's solve for X. They called me every name you could think of that began with mother. They were going to be unemployed for a very long time. That is bad unemployment in the short run, but it also represents the future. When I was teaching early in my teaching career, I was watching jobs being wiped out for manual bookkeeping and things like that because computers were there. But then a whole new generation came along. And then suddenly those computers were no longer substitutes for the human capital. The human capital became complements for the computers later. In Henry Ford's time, when the cars started coming along, the unemployment of people who made horse and buggy equipment, blacksmiths, all that kind of stuff, it was staggering. But then that opened the era when a new generation who could work with cars, knew how engines worked, and all that kind of stuff. There was the whole new era, and all the ancillary industries, the hydrocarbon, the petroleum industry, and all that came about. So structural unemployment is bad in the short run, but it is good in the long run. But it's also bad in the long run. Those people I was teaching, they have kids. Those kids get to watch their parents bitter, broken, angry. Those kids get to grow up thinking of less, thinking that their lives are going to be like their parents' lives. No matter what they say, they live by the role model they see. Look at all of you in this classroom. Not one of you aspires to be a president of a large corporation, to be a powerful person, to be wealthy beyond anyone's dreams. That's not what you will do. You'll be lucky if you get your AA. You're bright people. You'll be lucky to get your associate's degree, maybe a bachelor's degree if you struggle. And then you'll go out there and you'll be proud $40,000, $50,000 a year. You are intergenerational poverty. You are the intergenerational poverty of the prairie. That's my life too. I watched my father die and then watched my mother live the rest of her life in misery. Okay, geez, a trailer, that's great for me. $30,000 a year? Yeah, man, someday I'll do that. That is intergenerational poverty. And it is also good for the wealthy because they are going to need shit like us to do their jobs. But for us, it is the story of the American dream gone wrong. Technological innovation, wonderful. Except that it leaves a lot of people in the dust. And if it leaves a lot of people in the dust, it leaves their children and their children's children in the dust as well. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.